Please listen carefully.
Yeah, so I thought we could talk about you, actually.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, how you grew up, where you grew up, how you grew up, what you did for, like, sports,
mm-hmm.
that kind of thing. So, like, get to know Lamb.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
That works. I guess you can just probe questions along.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
So where did you grow up?
Where
were you born?
I was born in, that's an interesting story. I was born in the back of a military police jeep. And on the way.
Military police jeep?
In Taiwan. Taipei, Taiwan, in a refugee camp. So my parents were... you know, if you look it up, you can always find a story on the boat people, right? So it was kind of like a mass exodus of Vietnamese people escaping from communist Vietnam, and you know they were part of the boat people, and they ended up in Taiwan, and that's where I was born.
So you are Vietnamese.
I'm Vietnamese.
But you were basically, literally, being born. As your parents were fleeing.
Yeah, as my parents were fleeing. And, you know, so it's their story's amazing. That's kind of for another time, but, you know, it's kind of something that has been brought to my attention pretty much every single day as we've grown up, you know, kind of just their story and their hardships. So,
what do you mean, like, being reminded of or, like, being...
Well, I think it's with... You hear this very commonly with, I would say, Asian kids or my age, first generation, where kind of, hey, we did all these hardships so that you could have a better life, so earn it. Mm. You know, so you get that reminder a lot.
Do you feel like it's a guilt trip?
I think that it can be received as a guilt trip.
Okay, so the intention is not to guilt you.
The intention is to remind you to... do your best, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think that when you're so young, you think of it as a guilt trip.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're, you know, as the things when you're young and the things that your parents remind you aren't necessarily things that you want to do. Mm-hmm. Like study really hard or, you know, be well disciplined. Shoot, you just want to play video games or, you know, go play or do something like that.
Right. Well, you didn't know the hardships that they went through. Because you were so young, you were literally
right.
You were born, and then you were obviously infant growing up. When did you move to the States? So, okay, so you were born.
Yep, we spent 3 years in the Taiwanese refugee camp.
Okay.
And that's where I learned what balut was. He's the guy
okay.
who would run up and down the buildings and
you know,
be like, balut, balut. And that's where I learned what balut was and enjoy it to this day.
So if someone's listening and they don't know what balut is.
Yeah, so but balut is it's a duck egg. It's a fertilized duck egg. And when you, the way it's eaten is you boil it and it's cooked and when you crack open the egg, the wonderful little ducky is still there. Sometimes a little bit of the feathers as well, and it throws some mint leaves on there, some salt, pepper, and lime juice, and it is a wonderful meal. I think that
really is like you really enjoy it. You haven't had it. You don't have it like regularly, right? But
no, I don't have it regularly, but I do very much enjoy it.
Yeah.
Much to the chagrin of a lot of people that I know.
Right.
But hey, it's good. I've thrown down a dozen and a half in a sitting before.
A dozen?
Yeah.
Big? So
they're just
big.
Like a regular egg. Yeah. Yeah. It's real good.
I mean, eating a dozen just regular eggs is a lot, I feel like.
Yeah, it is.
Uh-huh.
It
All
is.
Right.
But it's good.
You're just like living the body of your life. Vietnamese bodybuilder.
Yeah, exactly. That's what
That's
I
what
look
they
like.
eat.
Yeah,
Yeah, okay, got
exactly.
it.
I bet you that the nutrition value is probably pretty
I
good.
bet it's off the charts.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, eggs are, well, that's all I was, yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah,
All
absolutely.
right, so grew up till you were three.
I was three. We immigrated to San
Wait,
Francisco.
so I'm Korean.
Yeah.
Not that I was, so that's another story. But basically, Koreans will use a different aging system. So like when you're born, you're
Oh, you're
one,
one. You're automatically one.
right?
Yes.
But then no matter when you're born, when the new year comes,
Correct.
you're two,
Yep.
right? So do you do that too?
I don't, my parents do. So when the Chinese / Vietnamese New Year comes, I'll be 36 to them.
Right, okay. But
Yes.
you say that you're 35.
I'm 35 and I'll be 36 next September. Right. But to them, I'll be 36 in February.
Right.
Yeah, or
Okay, interesting.
whatever the New Year's calendar, the lunar
Okay.
calendar falls on.
I wasn't sure who else did that.
Yeah,
All right.
yeah.
Okay, so anyway,
Nope.
back to so on the tangent. So you're three.
So I'm three.
Okay.
I apparently spoke fluent Cantonese as well.
Nice.
Yeah. Don't speak a lick of it now.
That's funny.
And then we immigrated to San Francisco, where, that's, as much as the hardships there. My parents kind of struggled through their finding jobs, and my dad was telling me that he was busing tables for $3 an hour, that kind of stuff. And we were lucky to have some help with friends and cousins. But eventually, we were there for 2 years, two
So
years.
you knew people there, or your family knew
Yes, my
people
parents.
in San Fran. That's why they
Correct,
moved to San Fran.
and then. Most then we had he had trouble finding jobs, and then he had family over in Jersey, and that's why we flew over there, and
Okay.
he got a job, and kind of the rest is history from that perspective. So I spent most of my life in central to North Jersey.
Gotcha. So when you were in San Fran, I'm just trying to think of your. So you have a sister
I
and a
did not.
brother,
Oh,
but they
right.
were not
They
born
weren't born, right.
in San Fran. They were born in New Jersey.
They were born in New Jersey.
Okay,
Yep.
got it.
Yep.
So your dad was bussing tables in San Fran. What was your mom doing?
My mom was taking ESL classes, and she was also, I think she was just taking ESL classes at that point, just kind of going to school and trying to do her thing while my dad was supporting the family.
Did she have an intention of something particular, or she just knew that learning English was a priority?
I don't know. I don't know. I think. I don't know if they had a plan. I know their plan was at that point was just to kind of make ends meet. And the way my dad puts it is really phenomenal, because you don't see it this way. But he said to me, he said, "You come over to this country and you're blind, you're deaf, and you're mute." I'm like, "Well, what does that mean, Dad?" He goes, "Come over here, you can't read. You can't speak the language, and you don't understand what the hell everyone's saying. So try putting all that together and supporting a family with the clothes on your back." So just figuring out or thinking of it that way, it just blows my mind. And I know you and I talk about going to different countries and exploring and not knowing the language. And yeah, sure, that's great, because there's no pressure. You're not supporting a family. You're not. You don't have a mouth to feed. That's an awesome experience.
Yeah, travel, for at least our travel, has been temporary,
Yeah.
even if it's 2 weeks.
Right.
And to be honest, I mean, most countries speak, some people there speak English,
English, right.
right? So,
Exactly.
yeah, it's a privilege to
Yeah,
speak
exactly.
English, yeah.
So now you're 20-something years old, not a dime to your name, and you don't speak the language, and you have a family to feed, and you just essentially lost your country because you had to run away, right?
So your mom learned was taking classes. Did your dad, but your dad didn't know English. So
Yeah, my mom was taking classes, and my dad was just working at that point, And
Kind of like learning what he needed to know in the
yeah,
moment.
it's kind of blurry for me from that perspective of all what happened in San Fran since I was so young.
Got it.
And then it was, hey, there was an opportunity to, number one, move closer to the cousins on the East Coast, and there was a job here that was paying more, and that's why we made the move.
Did your parents have, like, what did they grow up learning or did they have jobs in Vietnam? Like, what was their career
Yeah,
prior?
my dad was he was certified to he went to school. I mean, both my parents, and this is kind of what when I get sad is both my parents graduated top of their class. You know, so they're unbelievably smart intellects, and you know, my dad, as smart as he was, he wanted to be an auto mechanic and open his store. My mom was in finance and accounting. And none of that means anything over here,
Got
right?
it.
So,
How's it going?
hey guys,
Sorry,
we're
we're just
doing.
recording a little
No
thing.
worries.
Okay. So, mom, finance, accounting,
Yep.
and dad wanted to open up his own
Business,
business
mechanic shop.
for being mechanic. Got it.
Yep.
Okay. So did they do any of that? Did they actually get to, were they working before getting out of the country or?
No. My mom and my dad left at 18 and 19.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah. And the only reason they could afford to do it was because my dad was a mechanic. Like, they needed a mechanic to fix the motor on the boat
Oh,
that
wow.
eventually died anyway in the middle of the sea. Right.
Jeez.
So, you know, again, it's a crazy story. Like, they were never supposed to survive that trip. So, you know, they were floating around in the sea, and my mom said it was like a 12, 15-foot boat, and there was a bunch of people
Probably more people than
than you
you
should
know
have
than
in
you
a.
should have on a 12, 15-foot boat, right? Yeah.
And they got picked up. Luckily, they got picked up by the Taiwanese Border Patrol, and they were taking in refugees at that point.
And at that point, she was pregnant with you?
No, my mom was pregnant with my older brother. That didn't make the trip.
Got it.
Yeah, and then that they were there in Taiwan, and then they got pregnant with me at the refugee camp. Yep.
Got it at the camp.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you are living in San Fran, you moved to New Jersey. You probably you don't remember any of that?
I remember a lot of Jersey. I don't remember a lot of San Fran.
Right.
San Fran was just way too young,
Right.
for a few years.
Sure.
Yeah, but Jersey, I do remember. I do remember, you know, first grade and being in Edison, growing up in Edison, and then we moved around a lot from apartment to apartment. My parents finally saved up enough money to buy a house in South Plainfield when I was in third grade, and then that's kind of where we grew up. You know, Lynn and Zui grew up in that house, and you know, a lot of my fondest memories are from that house.
So you were how old when who's older, Lynn, right?
Yeah, Lynn is middle child, and Zui is the youngest.
Right. And
Yep.
Lynn just got married.
Lynn just got married. Yep.
What was your relationship like with Lynn and Zui growing up?
Oh man, it was. I know people talk a lot about like, oh, I live with no regrets and things like that. It's probably one of my biggest regrets is that I was put in a position to raise them. I think when you're that much older and your parents are very fearful as immigrants because they don't know the language and they want to make sure their kids are growing up the right way, is that you're the oldest is usually put in a position where you're in a more authoritative position instead of being friends with your siblings. And that was kind of that was my relationship. I was dad, you know, when mom and dad were working 7 days a week, 12, 14 hours a day, there was no one home, so I was unfortunately put in that position to
kind of make sure that all things were organized, set up in the house, and make sure that they were taught the right things and stuff like that. So it was rough. I would say that relationship was rough growing up. We spent a lot of, I say now, we spent a lot of time kind of repairing that and just being friends, which at, you know, your 20s, your 30s, you should be, I think, as siblings.
Mm-hmm.
But it was difficult. I think it was very difficult. And the amount of pressure that was put on me on that aspect was huge as well.
Who is more difficult to handle, sister or your brother?
Oh, definitely my sister, because just from the age difference, right? Zui is 9 years younger than me. So right. It's not hard to put to push authority on Zui.
Right, because you are that much older that you're just like, no, you're going to do what I say. Whereas yeah. Lin is
5 years.
Yeah.
5 years. So, you know, we had a interesting relationship because Lin, if you know my sister, does not like being told what to do,
mm-hmm.
period.
Mm-hmm.
She marches to her own beat.
Right.
And she is very much very strong-willed and really does not like to be told what to do. So we had a very conflicting relationship,
sure.
especially when I'm put in that position. And I think a lot of growing up was just us kind of fighting all the time,
mm-hmm.
even though I was supposedly, you know, trying to tell her the right things to do. She just didn't care.
Right. Right.
Half the time, she didn't care what my parents said as well. So,
got it.
It was now to think about it. It was really
interesting. Well. And this is also a time where right, there's no cell phones.
No.
There's usually one phone in the house. It's landline.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
So,
when we weren't allowed to really watch that much TV, so it's like you deal with each other.
Right.
Play. Make something up.
Right.
We tortured the hell out of Zui. Like poor kid, who's just like. 3 years. I think of Eli right now,
mm-hmm.
and just the stuff we used to make Zui do when Eli was his son. I was like, man, that was just mean, right? And we just tackle and smother him with pillows, and both of us jumping on top of him. And it's like, man, I don't know how he survived, but I guess he turned out pretty well.
He's probably more resilient because of it.
Yeah.
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 Whether he knows it or not.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But yeah, we didn't grow up with much. We didn't really have. We never felt poor.
Mm-hmm.
I knew now to think about it, my parents did a great job saving and making sure we had the necessary things. We didn't have, we never had name brand stuff, and we just, but I never felt like we couldn't, I never felt like we were always struggling financially. So, props to them for doing that, because I know we did not have much.
Got it. Did that has that influenced you now in terms of money or having name brand stuff or even just like materialism in general?
Mm-hmm.
How do you approach that? And do you feel like growing up in that family, whether you knew it or not at the time, like do you feel like that has influenced? So kind of two-part question, but like.
Yeah, so first part, I know that the way we grew up and the way my mom handles money is a huge influence on how I handle money. The credit card debt was, I think at that time, you were essentially encouraged to incur credit card debt. That pushed the economy, but my parents were always like, you never spend more than what you have, period.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we didn't go out a lot, we didn't go out to eat, so my parents were always basically putting money away,
right,
so that they could pay for the house, they could, you know, save for whatever they needed, like a car.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, very much a lot of my financial decisions are about, you know, establishing a strong foundation, never spending more than you have,
mm-hmm.
And constantly saving.
Got it.
So that's just kind of how I approach things. And then I think from a name brand material perspective, I think I'm as guilty as anyone in America who falls into some of the name brand and the marketing and things like that. But I
sure.
I you know, I'll treat myself, but I think that I'm always kind of second guessing and making sure that everything from a financial perspective is in line before I, mm-hmm. you know, I do take that jump. And it's just because I know that there's always that message in the back of my head with my mom is always like saving money, keep putting stuff away, and not just being frivolous with you know your funds because you work hard for it.
Yeah. Do you follow blogs or newsletters or like what are your like resources for educating yourself or you know keeping up with like money stuff,
the personal finance?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I used to follow this blog called Get Rich Slowly, mm-hmm. and read this book called Get Rich Slowly by Ramit Sethi. Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think that was one of the most eye-opening books that I've read, only because it was like, oh, you know what? This guy is doing what I have been doing. And just a few tweaks here and there, I can kind of basically automate a lot of the things. And you know, you and I, we talk all the time. We're huge on life hacks, right? Mm-hmm. Just let me automate it. Let me worry about other things. Be disciplined about it so I can worry about better things.
Right.
And he just talks about, you know, the people who get rich quickly, that doesn't happen often. Getting rich or building wealth isn't sexy, mm-hmm. right? Those, you know, you hear about all the brokers who are making a lot of money on stocks and things like that. They don't kind of one in a million. So how do you do that as a layman, right?
You
automate your savings this way. You save, put in your 401k and invest in these specific timed funds or whatnot. But also he talks about being able to save and spend in a way that you're not feeling guilty all the time, right? Listen, I have a huge thing for video games or computer or car stuff, and also I want to travel, but if I throw all that money in my emergency and savings fund, I feel guilty spending that money. So how do you segregate that out? How do you put that into savings and make it an automated way so that when you do spend it, you're like, ah, you know what? This money is for that. So that was a huge education. I fully recommend, and I do this for, they probably think I'm really corny and crazy, but I buy the book and I give it to any of my cousins who graduate from college. Like, this mm-hmm. is a thing you should read because
got it.
We don't get any of that in high school or college, how to
right.
spend money, how to save, what's a 401k.
How to manage your money.
Yeah, mm-hmm. right. You get this really huge paycheck and all you want to do is buy a new TV or you know, suddenly think that you can afford a $400 car payment, $400-$500 car payment, and then suddenly you're in the hole all
right.
the time.
Got it. How do you work or teach Eli and Layla, or maybe you don't now yet because you want to wait or mm-hmm. whatever. I mean, they are young, but what's your thought process on your own kids and raising them?
I think from a financial perspective, I would almost do the very much very similar to what my mom did. Just focus on saving. What we're doing now, which was very important to my mom as well, is that whatever money they get, mm-hmm. They love putting money in the piggy bank, you know, just because of the act of it. But we have
right, an actual piggy bank, right?
Right, yeah. Piggy bank, and right. Elijah. Asked my mom for 50 quarters for his birthday, just because he came up with random number 50. So my mom actually went out and got him 50 quarters. So he
That's
sat
awesome.
There and we split up the quarters and we're putting in the piggy bank. But one of the lessons that I wanted to, Becca and I wanted to teach them is that we also give to people less fortunate. So we have a separate piggy bank that they have to split.
Mm.
And you know, and allow them to kind of understand, hey, you know, there are people that don't have what you have. You're extremely lucky, and that you should focus on giving back as well.
Got it.
You know, I know you and I talk about it, and it's one of our CrossFit kind of missions is to kind of to give back to make the community better. So
yep,
it's right in line with, you know, what I want for myself and what I want for the kids as well. But yeah, from a financial perspective, I think what I wish my parents had done is let me spend more to have that experience.
Mm-hmm.
It was just all my paychecks and everything I worked for went into their account, and they're like,
It was 100% saved.
Yeah, Mom, right. Why can't I spend my own money? And she would look at me and she goes, why can't you buy your own house? Why can't you cook your own food? And that kind of showed me up.
Got it.
So,
all right. So, high school. What was high school like for you?
Man, high school was rough.
Yeah.
High school was rough. Just think of any kind of stereotypical high school movie, and then put your little skinny Asian kid, who you know didn't have any money to compete with, wearing the nice clothes and whatnot.
Public high school?
Public high school, right. And, I mean, luckily, South Plainfield was kind of a blue-collar town. So not everyone had too much, but still, you know, you're still on the lower income side, and you're just different. You know, I always knew I was different. And I always say that the only thing that saved me or survived in high school was sports. I was good at sports, and that kind of just kept me out of any line of sights of too much bullying. But you know, I was in choir. I played in a little bit of the jazz band. I was in an a cappella group. I was vice president of the chess club. And, you know, just really getting involved with everything. But I think it was
that hard to do, to be an athlete but also be involved with chess club and a cappella and choir and all that?
Fortunately, it was not as hard as it would have been at like Beck School, which North Penn. She was like, if mine was stereotypical, Beck was even more like the athletes sat with their own group.
Mm-hmm. You know,
the choir kids and drama kids sat with their own group.
Gotcha.
We had the captain of the football team in our choir.
Okay.
The cheerleaders were in the choir.
So it made the
transition a little bit easier.
Yeah, crossing over, you know.
Exactly.
Being in different groups was actually pretty normal.
Yep, it wouldn't be unheard of to see, you know, during soccer practice, to see a bunch of kids running in late with notes from band because they had jazz band practice or choir practice, which helped a lot. But yeah, I mean, I think that definitely saved me. But just the transition of growing up in high school, being the small, book smart, and also involved in the arts, and then the whole transition of being an Asian American. I think we don't talk about that much, but identifying between the home life and the American life is massive. It's stressful.
Did you feel like you were a different person in school versus at home?
Yeah, very much so. There were expected duties when you got home, so I was a very different person. I was very serious and, you know, making sure I got my stuff done, and then I was a goofball at school, night and day, very much so.
Were you goofball because that's who you are, like really deep down, or were you goofball because you like needed to like let off steam, or like you know, kind of count, like balance the seriousness of being the dad, the second dad of the house?
I think that's just my personality.
Yeah.
I like to laugh,
right?
I like making people laugh, and
yep.
That's just my personality. And it was just, I think at home the responsibilities just got so overwhelming that there was no time for that.
Sure.
And you know, just make sure that, listen, I love my parents to death, but they are strict as anything. So if things were out of line,
mm-hmm.
like you heard it and you felt it. Like you got yelled at, you got beat. Like no questions for it. So if Lynn and Zwie were out of line, I got beat for it. Right.
Because
so,
you were the older one.
And
you were
the
responsible
one.
For
Correct.
Them.
Correct. Correct. So there were no excuses. You know, if they didn't eat on time, they didn't have dinner on the table, and my parents got home and found out that was
hell to pay. Like my mom got home from work and dinner was on the table for her. Her slippers were on the ground. Her tea was on the table. So that was all prepared by the time she got home from work. Like that was expected.
And you were, I mean, you played sports, right? You played soccer?
Yeah. Yeah.
I played soccer. How did you balance playing? Because you would have practice, you would have games, right?
Right. So I guess that part of being in sports was kind of an escape as well. Mm. Just, hey, I had an excuse to go play soccer.
Right.
So I was most of my time in high school, I was a three-season athlete just because I kind of wanted to get away from my responsibilities.
What else did you do besides soccer?
I played soccer in the fall. I ran winter track just to keep up with it for two years in the winter, and then played tennis in the spring. So I was trying to be, you know, when I got really involved junior and senior year, I was kind of trying to get away from home a little bit just because there was just so much pressure.
Be busy so that you didn't have to be home.
Exactly.
Got it.
So it was, I think it formed a lot of who I am today. But there were a lot of things that needed to be worked out because I think, you know, like anyone in high school is a huge transition to becoming an adult and who you are and your experiences that will shape how you look at the world from then on.
Would you change anything about your high school experience? Like within your control, so how you approached high school?
No, I think within my control, I think ultimately with what happened in high school and all the things I got involved in, I did as much as I could, you know, and that was kind of as much of it being an escape. It also made me kind of reach out into things that I would never have done. So right. it was really from an experience perspective, from the quantity, it was good.
Got it. Going back to your parents being strict, do you feel like you're strict with Layla and Eli?
Yeah, I'm not as strict as my parents are. Obviously, I don't beat my kids. I don't believe in that.
Mm-hmm.
And only because I used to get beat all the time and I didn't learn my lesson. It's like, oh yeah, you know, if you get beat, child will not do A anymore. I kept doing A.
Right.
It doesn't matter to me.
You're a living example of that.
Absolutely.
Physical does not work.
Yeah. Lynn is a living example of, if in fact, I'm not going to do A, but I'll do B to piss you off.
Right.
Right. So I don't personally believe beating works. And listen, it's different for everyone.
Sure.
But I'm very strict with Eli and Layla. I have high expectations for my kids in terms of how they should, how disciplined they should be on certain things, the structure they follow, the respect they pay to adults, elders, and things like that. And I know I'm ultimately a lot stricter than the people around me, but it's just kind of, you know, what I believe in.
Who's more strict, you or Beck?
I am, hands down. We used to think that I was going to be, you know, I was going to melt and Layla was going to have me wrapped around her finger. And she does, you know, she gets away with a lot more than my parents would have ever let me get away with. But I'm definitely, I like order. I mean, you know me, I like order in my life, period. Right. So that doesn't fall far from my kids either. Mm-hmm. But Beck has a lot of fun with them. And not that I don't. I think it's just that, you know, I'm bad cop a lot of times, and that's okay. That's okay if that helps them have some structure, and you know, they call for mom out all the time or most of the time, that's okay.
Got it.
That's okay.
So high school, going into college, did you know what you wanted to study applying to college?
No, I had no idea. There's always pressure of, you know, mom and dad
saying, "Oh, you should be a doctor. I want you to be a doctor.
Mm.
You know, I want you to be a doctor. I want you to be
stereotypical Asian
immigrant
family,
right? Absolutely. I want you to play.
Family, right?
I want you to be a professional piano player. I yeah. want you to do all that kind of sorts of crazy stuff." So I started off first of all applying to schools. I really was pressured into certain schools just because, number one, we couldn't afford a lot of the schools.
Mm.
And number two, I think my parents always had intentions of me being closer to home. Right? I wanted to go to UC Irvine. Right? I wanted to apply to the Air Force Academy, and it just never happened because I knew that even if I got in, like, I would be quote unquote allowed to go. So
why did you want to apply to the Air Force Academy?
No, I always had a, and you'll laugh at this because it kind of contradicts everything we've talked about. I always felt like I wasn't disciplined enough. So I felt like going to the Air Force Academy, just people would just tell you what to do. Or maybe it was because I felt that I was disciplined because my parents were always there drilling it into me.
Right.
So that was probably an indirect way of saying, crap, I'm afraid of what will happen when I have control of my own time.
Right.
So I wanted to
look at, well, and you like order.
I like order.
And any of the academies would absolutely give you order.
I would have freaking thrived in any kind of academy.
Yeah, like West Point, down. Naval Academy.
Yep.
Sure.
Yep. Hands down. Hands down.
Wow.
You know,
but
so,
they wouldn't go for that. They didn't want you going to Colorado.
No, they didn't want me traveling far. They would, you know, yeah. they didn't want me. They wanted me close to home, and that was kind of that was that.
Wow.
That was okay. that.
So those are all conversations before you even applied anywhere?
Yes. They were, they weren't really conversations.
Right.
They
sure.
were more like, you know,
those
you're going to do
this. Those
are
not two-sided conversations.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, I remember, you know, we talk about that. It's like when I talk to my, you know, my quote-unquote American friends, they're like, why don't you just talk to your parents? I'm like, yeah. I'll let you know how that goes.
You come over and
yeah,
meet my
come
parents
over
and you
and
see if you
talk
can
talk to my parents.
Right.
Yeah, there was no such thing as those conversations. You know, that talking to my parents only recently happened within the last 5 or 6 years, and I'm 35 years old.
Right.
Right. It's probably because I finally had kids, and they're like, "Okay, now you're an adult."
Right. Right.
You may now have a seat at the table because exactly. now you have children.
You are no longer at the children's table.
Yes.
Because
exactly.
your children are at the children's table.
Yep. Very much so.
Got it.
Very much so.
So where did you apply?
Applied to Stevens Institute of Technology, Bucknell, Villanova, Lehigh, TCNJ,
mm-hmm.
Lafayette. So all of the kind of neighborhood schools.
So within, yeah, 2 hours or so.
Yeah, 2 hours or yeah. so.
Driving
and,
distance.
Yeah, and that was it. That was it. I had my...
Now you ended up at TCNJ.
Yep. TCNJ hooked me up with a scholarship, and plus in-state was like, $12,000 a year.
Yeah. So was your decision primarily financial?
It was financial, and it was also where honestly, I kind of felt at home at TCNJ. I
Good.
Visited the school, and
yeah.
and they gave me, you know, now to think about it, it's not really that much money, but it was still half of what of the scholarship. So I was like, shoot, you know, no loans, and you know how financially focused I was and my parents were. I'm like, this is a great deal.
Good. Well, it's good. That's great though, because that's the combo of feeling you've had the right feeling,
yeah,
culture wise, but also it worked out financially.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I loved the campus at that time, and it also, you know, a couple of people I knew went to school there, so it wasn't too far off the reservation of what I didn't know.
Got it.
Yeah.
Now, when did you figure out your major and your career path?
So I came in as a bio major.
Oh.
Yeah, it came in as a bio major, and within the first 2 weeks, I changed majors.
Sure.
To comp sci.
Okay.
Yep. And that was huge. It was like, oh my gosh, what are my parents going to say? So I didn't tell them.
Nice.
I didn't tell them, and I changed to a comp sci major. And from that perspective, I was staying up till 2-3 in the morning looking at my computer, and I thought it would be the greatest day. I'm allowed to stay up and mm-hmm. be on my computer, making a stupid tic-tac-toe board turn colors every time you clicked X and circle or O, and and I thought it was the dumbest thing I've ever done. So by the next semester, I changed to an MIS major. So within one semester, I changed majors twice.
Got it.
Yep.
MIS, Management Information Systems,
which is kind of like a what we call, well, what they call a programmer dropout school, and then you learn a little bit of business classes. Yeah. So that was, yeah, that's kind of what I wanted. I knew I wanted to do something with computers, and I knew business was, learning generic business classes were, just, it would never hurt.
Right.
Right.
And that's what you graduated with, MIS?
By the skin of my teeth, yes. Yeah. I graduated with MIS. Yep.
So my next question was, were you a good student in college?
No.
But it sounds like not.
No,
great.
I was a phenomenal student in high school.
Yeah.
I was an awful student in college. You get off high school and you're like, oh, you know what, natural smarts, and mm-hmm. don't really spend that much time studying, and you get off this high, and then you get to your freshman year where you don't really do that studying. You do okay. You're like, you're fine. I hit my second semester of freshman year, and then my sophomore year, and I was pulling D's like it was nobody's business. I wasn't going to class, and so that kind of pulled that through, and I met Beck, and I was like, I don't want to do this. I'm going to drop out. And she's like, well, if you have to drop out, make that decision.
Wow.
I think I was going through a lot at that time as well, with stuff at home and just dealing with my parents, and then also like going through a bad breakup. So the last thing I wanted to do was go to class. And my second semester, my sophomore year, I had something like a 2.0, probably even lower than that, GPA. And I was like, okay, it's time to shape up. It's time to start studying. It's time to actually go to class. And I mean, I'm sure you hear stories of it all the time, but once you start with that GPA, it's almost impossible to bring it back up. But I, junior year, senior year, I didn't miss a class.
Wow.
And I started pulling A's and B's and started actually studying and putting some effort into it. So I graduated with a 3.01, just enough to put it on my resume, and
wow.
Just enough credits to graduate on time.
Hmm.
So
you almost dropped out.
I almost dropped out. Yeah.
Holy smokes.
I was just like, school's not for me. And I think it was just things were getting way too difficult at that time to and I just wanted to give up. But I say it all the time. Beck really saved me. She was there for me, and she was the calmer head and willing to listen to me, where, for people that I had in my life at that point was just dictating what I should do, right? So, it was almost dropped out. College was much more difficult for me than high school.
Mm-hmm.
Because high school is a lot more structured.
Right.
College is, here you go, figure it out.
Right, figure it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
And you were so used to so much order in your life.
Yep.
And everything pretty much, your day was full.
Yes.
Right? Like you went to school all day, you were in a classroom all day, then you had practice or games. And you came home and you had to do whatever you need to do at home.
Yep.
Get homework done.
That was it.
And then that was it.
Rinse, repeat.
Rinse, repeat.
Yep. Yeah. Exactly. And college was time. You mm-hmm. had plenty of time. You had plenty of parties and plenty of girls. And that was kind of, forget class.
Now, did you play sports?
I played club tennis. In my junior and senior year, I played club volleyball my freshman and sophomore year, and I think also my sophomore and junior year I was playing for a club soccer team as well. So just, active in so that I could feel like I was back in high school again in organized sports.
Right.
But I was mostly, I would say, competitive playing tennis. We went to like nationals and stuff like that, so it was really cool.
That's
a really good experience.
Yeah
But from a lifting and being a dedicated athlete perspective, nothing really.
So when did you meet Beck?
I met Beck my freshman year of college at a house party, And it was just through friends, and it's like, hey, how's it going? And nice to meet you. And that was it. And then
that was it, meaning like super casual. Like,
yeah,
didn't
way
even
too casual.
Didn't think twice about it. Just hey,
not a chance. Exactly.
Hey, nice to meet you. Cool.
Yep. 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 You know, I don't think either of us fit our stereotypical people we would date. Like, Becca never had small Asian guy in her guys.
I don't know why.
Exactly.
Why she wouldn't. I mean,
I know, right?
Isn't that the
That's
stereotypical hunk in America?
Totally. Totally small, skinny, lanky Asian guy,
right,
who got bright red when he drank. And it was just super casual. And then my sophomore year, we started hanging out more. And I tell this story all the time. It's that she was student teaching because she was a senior. So she never used her meal plan.
She was a senior. You were?
A sophomore.
Sophomore.
Yep. She never used
so
her
older
meal
woman.
Plan. Older woman. Hell yeah.
Nice. Got it. So didn't use her meal plan.
Didn't use her
but
meal plan.
You
I was
like
gone.
Eating.
Yeah, I was gone. I was out of my meal plan. I had the largest meal plan by October. Okay. So there's this girl who was pretty cool. You know, I liked her. She was kind of really nice to talk to, and didn't use her meal plan. And she was always, you know, she would get back from student teaching. Mm-hmm. Right at dinner time.
Right.
And hey, man, you remember Instant Messenger? It's like whenever she was away,
yeah.
When she came back from away, I was like, hey, you want to do dinner?
Yeah.
And that was it. That's kind of, you know, she feeds me now, and that's kind of like the way.
So
to my
you
heart.
Used your wife
I
for
used my wife
food
for food, as I still do now. Yep.
What was your classic away message?
Oh my goodness. I went through some hardcore depression in college, mm-hmm. So take any kind of
Dashboard Confessional lyrics.
Oh my gosh, or Boys to Men, or any kind of stupid stuff like that, and put it on there, and that was it. That was it. So plus you know there's so many screen names back then. So I used to be like Topspin 924. Asian sensation. What was some still? Oh my gosh, there's so many good ones as well. Probably things I can't mention on this podcast. But
now, did you have all these running at the same time?
Yeah,
yeah.
There was an aimbot app where you could have multiple screens.
I know fully
well. Of course.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, you know, it was man, those days back then. That was good. That was good.
It's really fun. Yeah.
Yep.
And people would see, if they were friends with you on all of them, they would hear the door open or close.
Yep.
Whenever.
Yeah.
You came back online.
My roommate, who had this banging sound system with the sub, he would turn all the time, but he would forget to mute. Mm-hmm. So in the middle of the night, you would go, boom.
Oh, man.
Like, what the heck?
Hearing the
dude,
chimes and the.
Turn off your speakers. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of how Beck and I. Got to know each other. And
yeah. So did she think you were like trying to make moves romantically because of this, or it was platonic and it was just like, hey, let's go eat. Because,
it was definitely platonic. It was definitely mm-hmm. platonic, and it was Beck. Beck was actually the chaser. I had just gotten out of a pretty brutal relationship, and I, you know, all I wanted to do was kind of. Or see other people and hook up with other, like, and not really be in a steady relationship. So she was kind of, we were just friends.
Mm-hmm.
She knew that. And then one day we were talking, and we were in a lunchroom. And so I don't know why the hell I would say something like that. I looked at her, and I'm like, so when did you figure out that you liked me? And she's like, the hell?
It's so arrogant of you.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if I were the girl, I'd be like, dude, what are you talking about? Stand up and leave. And, well, I mean, she did respond with, like, who said I liked you? That kind of thing. But that was probably when we started, you know, really being romantically linked and being really interested in each other that way.
So this was her senior year?
This was her, towards the end of her senior year.
Got it.
Yeah.
Now, she had already had a job because of the student teaching, Like, she must have had some idea of what her plans were going to be for after school.
Well, she did. And, of course, if you're talking about organized, Becca is 10 times more organized than I am. So she knew she wanted to be a teacher. Like, mm-hmm. when Becca knows she wants to do something, she knows.
She's going
to
do it.
Like, there's no question
right.
about it. So she wanted to be a teacher. So she wanted to go out and graduate and then apply to... first of all, she took a year off just to kind of settle a little bit. And then she applied to PL, where she went to school. It's a private school in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. And she applied there, and they rejected her. And ultimately that broke her heart. She was just like, I went to school
because she was fully expecting
My mom
to get a job
went
there.
To school here, and my mom teaches here, like
right.
come on now,
right?
And this is where we talk about grit. We talk about wanting, knowing what you want to do. She spent the next 5 years pursuing teaching. She took a job at a daycare,
mm-hmm.
right? So any of the kindergarten stuff right now. And now that you finally look at the daycare teachers, you know the crap that they go through, right?
Sure.
So she also took long-term sub positions and then had to interview for her own position for a full-time position and didn't get those. So that went on for 5 years. And she was, as much as it kind of set her back when she didn't get the position, she just kept going. And I look at that and always say, you know, it's how bad do you want it, right? How bad do you want this particular thing that your goal? And, you know, and she ended up getting one of, like, the nicest positions in I guess, around this area at this point. So,
but she had moved back home.
She had moved back home, right. She was living with...
And you guys were technically in a relationship?
Yep. I was still in college, but, you know, I would just drive and be there, be at Lisa and Robert's house. And that's why, you know, when I talk to Lisa, I've known Lisa, my mother-in-law, for 16 years. She knew me when I was a boy, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was 18, 19 years old.
Yeah.
And feeding me dinner every night, and I was like, you know, a guy that came over.
Right.
I was going back and forth, and we were just kind of, which is... Also, just a 45-minute drive wasn't anything crazy. But we also had a circle of friends who was in Becca's year that we would hang out with. So I never really hung out with too many people at school. It's because most of my circle of friends were seniors at that time or had graduated.
Okay, so you had an older...
Yeah.
Your friends were typically the older classes.
Yep, and the people that I did hang out with school were the club, sports people. And then, of course, I had to, I mean, not that I'm stereotypical or anything, but join the Asian American Association.
Oh, yeah.
Where we went bowling and drank bubble tea. It's phenomenal.
Not stereotypical.
Not at all. Not at all. But our president was a white dude.
Nice.
And I just thought he had a thing for Asian girls. So I was like, by all means, come on.
Go for it.
Go for it. Yeah. It.
So you graduate. Where do you start working?
I started working at this place called Apprise Networks, and it was basically a warehouse manufacturing software that would just basically track inventory. Mm-hmm. So think of Walmart.
Yeah.
And, you know, think of all the
supply chain
and all that kind of stuff. So while I was doing that, I got a call from Merck. And Mark was like, hey, come on, we just saw your resume. I'm like, number one, how the hell did you get my resume? I don't remember applying. It was probably because I was basically spraying and praying with resumes, just sending out as many possible.
Gotcha.
And I had only been working for Apprise for a month. So I accepted the position at Merck and then kind of gave them the bad news. And they sent me this really nasty letter, which I have till today.
Nice.
And they're like, you should be ashamed that you cashed our paycheck because you made us you made us train you for a month and we didn't even reap the benefits. And it was like, hey, not the first nor the last person to kind of take care of my own career.
Right.
So, you know, worked at Merck for a few years. I got my master's there. They paid for it Like the teachers came to Merck campus. All I had to do was go downstairs and take courses. So that was really enjoyable. I mean, the Merck experience was really enjoyable. They took care of me really well. And now we just went to went to work for Cigna for a little bit, and now I'm at a startup running a PMO or project management organization.
Cool.
Yep.
And two kids, which we've already talked about.
Yeah.
Right.
Eli and Layla.
Do you feel like when you had them that you changed at all?
Oh yeah, my world flipped upside down. It became very. It was no longer about me.
Mm-hmm.
And my professional life, which had always driven me, my life till that point was about how far and how high I can get and how much money I can make.
Hmm.
And when Layla came, it was, I don't want to leave home, and I don't want to. I just want to make enough just so that I can be home and
that came from you. It wasn't like, Beck saying, hey, we need you home more.
No.
It was your own volition, your own decision making.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was, and I was having a conversation with someone. I remember even when I was a kid, all I wanted to do was be an awesome dad and be there. Right, and not that my dad didn't love me with all that he could, and in every way that he knew how to love me, but it was he couldn't be around, mm-hmm. right, because he was always working. And I think as an adult, you also realize that fear takes you to places where you don't necessarily make the best decisions. So my parents were living in fear all the time because. They didn't have the education, they didn't have the money, they didn't know what was influencing their kids, so they had to make a decision based on what they were afraid of.
Right.
And so that kind of, growing up like that, all I wanted to do is, like, when I have my own kids, this is how I want to do it. I want to be the best dad possible. I just want to be a great dad. So that was always hidden underneath because mm-hmm. I was focused on more of career goals and all that kind of stuff. But when Layla was born, that just all came spilling out.
Right.
It's like, I don't care about anything else. I care about my wife, I care about my family, and I care about my kids. And that comes first.
Right.
And I was just like, whatever money comes, then great, that's awesome. But I'm not, at some point, not really willing to risk any of that to pad my paycheck.
Got it.
Yep. So it definitely did just blow my world upside down and change my priorities, I think, for the better.
Yeah, yeah. What advice would you have for new parents or expecting parents?
I think be present. Be present. It's one of the simplest to say, but the hardest to do, to execute, right? We can get into all the nitty gritty of communicate and be there, but right. being present to me is something that I value so deeply, because it's not, it goes past your kids, even with your relationships, but to be present with your kids is something that you'll never get back if you lose. If you're not present when you're at 3 a.m. holding them to put them to sleep because they're not falling asleep when they're infants, you don't get to enjoy that. And I think that the more that I have been working on being present, you enjoy your kids a lot more.
Do you mean that in a, it sounds like you mean that in a mental sense.
Yes.
Right,
yes.
Like physically, obviously, be there, mm-hmm. you like doing that, but it sounds like you're talking more about mentally.
Correct.
Being present, not what, being preoccupied with work?
Yep.
Is that?
Yep. And I think this day and age, we all have our cell phones, we're all reachable via work or friends or social media.
And I, you know, you and I have been talking about my current position. So as I took another position for project manager, I was working at home. I was home.
Right.
I was physically there.
Right.
But I was so stressed out and wired out with this new startup that I wasn't present. I wasn't there for my kids. I would just sit there and be worried about work and be completely wired on, you know, what do I have to do next and things like that. So to me, that wasn't what I wanted to be as a dad, as a husband. And so, you know, from being an expecting father or expecting parent, mm-hmm. Try your best to be present. Try putting your phone away. Try putting on your calendar from 5 to 7:30 to focus. Just focus on that your family, just being present and not being distracted. Recently had a talk with one of our COOs, and he spent a lot of his life just working, and unfortunately his family situation didn't work out. And he said, one of the things that I can tell you, Lam, is that, you know, work as hard as you want, obviously, but make that time, separate that time for your family so that there you can be present. And when they go to sleep and you're done spending time with your wife, you want to work more, sacrifice some sleep. Wake up a little earlier, stay up a little later, but you still have to have that time to be present. And hearing that from someone, I know you read that in books and blogs and whatnot, right. But hearing that from someone who's gone through it and who has essentially lost his family due to not doing that was really powerful.
Sounds like he has a bunch of regrets.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very much so. Very much so. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, I think from one thing that I can tell expecting parents is be present. Try your best to be present.
So it's been like an hour,
yeah.
And we haven't talked about CrossFit.
Seriously.
So I think we should talk about CrossFit.
Yeah, let's. Yeah.
How did you get into CrossFit?
Like with a lot of positive things in my life, it involves Becca.
Right.
She had
pretty much everything you owe. Her,
right? I would say so.
Diddy would say the same for me.
So she had been doing CrossFit with Joy. I think you know Joy Naminsky.
Yep. We shot their wedding.
Yeah, exactly. Another bunch of foray things that we've gotten involved in. But she had been doing CrossFit for 6 months, and we had gone through the idea of let's do something together for a few activities, because Becca and I have nothing in common in terms of doing activities together.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we have a foundation of things that we do believe in that are the same, but in terms of I don't scrapbook.
Right.
She doesn't play soccer.
Right.
You know.
She doesn't play video games.
She does not play video games. She has tried.
Right.
And I give her the credit for trying to play video games with me. So we played indoor soccer for a season, and mm-hmm. We played in the very beginning of the league. So, I mean, awesome for trying it out. And she's like, it's my turn. I've been CrossFitting. And she showed me the CrossFit games.
Mm.
And I'm like, this is stupid. Is this what you do during class? Like, really? And she's like, yeah, this is what I do. And she was like, well, I played indoor soccer, so you come CrossFit with me. So I did.
Okay. Quid pro quo.
Yeah, very much so. And I came and did the base camp with Amy at CrossFit KOP.
Yep.
And, during base camp, it was... You would go through the movements like you do.
Fundamental movements.
Fundamentals. Yep. And then it was to kind of finish it out, it's 50 wall balls. So we did 50 wall balls. We were there and we started doing 50 wall balls, and Becca was my counter. And of course, in true fashion, she no repped the hell out of me.
So you didn't do 50?
No, I didn't do 50. I probably did about 60.
Yeah.
Yes, because she sat there and no repped me for a good 10 times. I'm like, number one, what does no rep mean? Like, why am I being no repped? And number two, why are you doing this to me? You know, at 25, your legs are burning, your arms are like, I don't know what's going on, and now you're making me do 10 more. And then, you know, that was kind of history. I got hooked because that was like, I'm here, I want to be here, because I had tried, you know, your LA Fitness, and I donated to them for years.
Mm-hmm.
just because
I like
think,
that donated.
They're a great philanthropy. They just you know, they try to get you fit, and then you just keep paying money to them. and you know, that's kind of that's where I met you, and you know, I just kept coming back because I found that I was a much better athlete after CrossFitting, and I was a lot stronger and I was a lot faster even than I would say, definitely in college, but I would say I'm a lot stronger than I was in high school. Mm-hmm. But I was a lot faster in high school. But now to think about it, if I were to play myself in soccer, I would just knock my old self down. Like, yeah. It doesn't matter how fast you are.
You could be more physical.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Hands down. So, you know, it was just, I was the best athlete I could be at that point.
What's your favorite workout?
I would say
a perfect workout for you?
I know I like Annie.
Okay.
I mean, Annie is one of my preferences. I mean, sit-ups and double unders all day long.
Right.
I never thought I would say this, but Cindy and Murph.
Mm.
Because they are, I mean, after losing all that weight, I just became kind of a body specialist, a body weight specialist.
Sure.
And then Murph was something that I was just so intimidated about. Like, oh my gosh, I hate running as much as I play soccer. I hate running. And then having to do essentially 20 rounds of Cindy and then running again. Like, well, what? I can't do this. And then once I did it, I was like, man, this is great. Like, this is kind of something I want to keep doing and bettering, becoming better. So
right.
I would say, you know, Annie, Cindy, Murph.
Cool.
Yep.
I like that.
Yep.
So body weight.
Yep. Give me a barbell and it kind of goes down the hill from there.
Yeah. Well, so what are you doing now? So, or what are your, do you have any goals now? What's your current workout situation?
Yeah.
How do you balance being a dad of two kids and working? And we kind of talked about this last time, but, you know, where are you now? What is the state of...
I think now I'm trying to work back to where I was a year and a half ago. Mm-hmm. A year and a half ago, and I remember when the light clicked that told me you, in order to really CrossFit as well as you'd want to, you can't just CrossFit, and that's kind of just how it works for me. Like when I was squatting, deadlifting, and doing 5x5s. Like right now I'm coming back into. Doing a strong lifts 5x5, which involves push press, bench press, deadlift, squatting, and you know, just four movements alternating.
Right, because you have a power rack at home.
Yep,
and you can do that in your garage.
Yep,
got it.
And I got to the point where I was deadlifting 395x5, squatting 285 5x5. So I felt so strong, and I wasn't afraid of the barbell at that point. You know, and of course, when you don't do those things, you end up losing it, and your performance suffers during a WOD as well. So that's kind of where I want to get back to, just because it's kind of a sense of pride that I've gotten there, and I want to keep continuing it, and then also being prepped for the Open, just so that I can kind of put myself, my best self out there.
Cool.
Yep. And so, you know, just... Maintaining with being regular at Kana, and then also curbing my eating and
cool.
reducing the sugar and starting to go back to just your basics at this point. So
got it. Yep. Get back to the basics.
Yep. Absolutely. And then it's probably because we also have a competition in November.
Yeah, so you and Beck.
Me and Beck, right. we're looking
partner competition
at the Fall Brawl. We're doing a scaled version, but we made a commitment to each other to do a competition a year. So
nice.
This will be our thing.
Cool.
And you know, it's fun, and you kind of put yourself out there. I think about all our new members, just the kind of. Nervousness or whatnot that you actually have to go perform at another box. It's not easy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's right. You know, once you get used to it, it's fun. But I would have to say one of my goals now is to look for, and this is risky on my side, but to be prepped enough to do kind of or do a competition by myself, and put myself out there and see where, you know, wherever it lands. But
I like it.
It's one of my things for now.
So I want to wrap up, but yeah. What advice would you have for new CrossFitters?
Stay with it. The process works. It's kind of like when you're in school and you just go to class. Mm-hmm. If you just go to class and just show up, mm-hmm. you're gonna get a B, a low B. Even if you know, because just the reps of going to class, you're gonna get better. You're gonna absorb. So just show up and go to class regularly, and the process and the training and the scaling will take effect eventually. And obviously, if you want to exceed that B, get to A status or become a better athlete, you'll have to work more and put more effort in. But if you're there to just stay in shape, be healthy, to not suffer any kind of metabolic diseases, show up, drink the Kool-Aid, be regular, be consistent, and follow through.
Cool.
Yeah.
Sweet. So we'll leave it there.
Yeah, man.
Thanks, dude.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
You got it.
Appreciate it.
Hey, folks. Thanks again for listening to CrossAcana Radio. If you like what you heard, head over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating and leave us a review, which helps us get found on the interwebs. Also, head over to social media. Find us on Facebook and Instagram at CrossAcana, K-A-N-N-A. And if you have any questions for the podcast, email us at info@crossfitcana.com. Thanks, and have a great day.